interview with Reg R.E.G. Murphy, editor of the Atlanta Constitution, April 30th, 1974.
How would you characterize the state of Georgia politics?
Schizophrenic. Georgia politics is schizophrenic in the sense that people will say all the time that they voted for Andrew Young and Lester Maddox at the same ballot box at the same time. And they both win, and they both will frequently win on the same. Not frequently, but sometimes we'll win in the same precinct.
How do they explain that, the people who say that?
Well, the blacks who say they do that say that they vote for Maddox because he thinks because they think he tells the truth, and they just like him, or, you know, he likes the boss. I saw the other day in one of those pickup trucks with a gun rack in the back, white fella, fairly red face. Drove up to Andy Young and jumped out of the cab, and Young said he was terribly afraid that fellow was coming to whip him. Came over to him, shook hands with him, said, "I just want you to know that you and Lester Maddox are the only two people I'm voting for this year." Looking for some kind of candor and unable to find it in the group of politicians who they have been around in the last 20 years. They can't find it in Carter, you know. He's a real namby-pamby kind of a fellow. Won't ever really be candid with him. Always looking for an honest expression of what a fellow feels. You know, Georgians really like to deal with raw emotions instead of the slicked down version. And that's the reason the demagogues have been so successful, is because they like to deal with this raw emotion and that raw appeal. And I think that's more important than ideology in some cases. And I think you have to deal with that. Like Georgia politics. Early 1960. Afraid of Atlanta, as they always have been, but afraid of it in a different kind of way. Sort of jealous of the city, but also understanding that this is where their sons and daughters come to work, and to live in the boarding houses and finally in the suburbs. That's important. I think they feel that they're very poorly represented in Congress, but well represented in the Senate. Sam Nunn's election in the Senate race was an honest expression of what Georgia people are looking for, a fellow who relatively conservative, who is articulate, who is, they think, a square shooter, who is a new, fresh face, and who they anticipate is bright enough to make things work. And he probably comes as close as anybody has in a long time to symbolizing what Georgia politics is all about. Nunn has solidified his strength because he's not always in the news, but when he is, he's doing something that really interests him. For example, he sort of revolutionized the budget-making process, if he's able to make it stick, by making them first declare how much money is available for the federal budget before they begin the allocation process. If he can make that stick, if that law really is made to stick, that'll be a hell of a innovation. They liked what he did about federal troop withdrawals and that sort of thing.
What did he do on that?
He and Jackson were able to pass a bill that forces the administration to begin the gradual withdrawal of some troops from some NATO countries. People wrote for a while that Georgia was great, making a great populist kind of a comeback. I don't know where the hell they got that data. There was no such thing. I just don't understand where that kind of attitude came from. You know, if you were to have a presidential election today and had a whole bunch of folks on the ballot, George Wallace would get more votes than anybody else. I don't know that he'd get 51%, but I think he might. And really torn apart by the destruction of the Democratic Party by the national candidates of the National Democratic Party. The Republicans had an opportunity because of that to win some political races. They failed because they didn't have any decent local candidates for any public offices. And the potential for that doesn't seem to me to be as good as it was before. I think the reason there's not as much potential is that the Democrats have done a pretty good job of rebuilding on a local base and disassociating themselves from the national politics of the last 2 or 3 years. The Republicans don't seem to ever grow anybody in the state who has any savvy about how you win political campaigns. And so they've really been unsuccessful. And they tried all the business of getting people to switch. They had 5 state house officers who had been elected who switched to the Republican Party all at the same time. At the next election, each one of them was either defeated or just didn't run again because he had no chance of winning.
Jimmy Bentley, who would not be exactly an impartial or objective observer, but he does have a certain perspective a few other people would have, he described the Republican Party as too much involved in kamikaze politics. Was that fair?
Yeah, that's right. It really is. It really is. Georgia Republicans spend more energy trying to destroy each other than any political group I've ever seen in my life. They really don't like each other. Factionalism has been around forever, and they can deal with it, and they can all work together after they Bentley himself got wiped out in DeKalb County because it looked like he was going to run pretty well in Fulton County. You know, in DeKalb County, the Republicans said, hey, we can't let anybody who's running well in Fulton County be elected governor of the state. And so Bentley just got destroyed. The Republicans also never have in this state found a man like Holzhauser or somebody who has the ability to bring a fairly broad respectability to the party. There has never been in Georgia a really attractive Republican who got elected as a Republican to a major office who could make it an attractive kind of situation. Fletcher Thompson, who was a congressman here, was not really an attractive political candidate. And then Blackburn, who now is the congressman from the 4th District, is not really an attractive statewide candidate either. They capitalize on local situations, but they're basically small-minded men.
Would Mike Egan be able to fill that role if he were inclined to, or would the fact that he's a Ivy League and Catholic be too much against him?
He comes closer than anybody else, and I personally would like to see, I don't care about his political affiliation, I'd just like to see him run for governor, because I think it would be an interesting race. Whether it would ever catch on, I don't know, but if he ever got elected, he'd be a damn handsome office holder to a lot of people, because he brings a kind of understanding to politics that these other very conservative guys don't bring. And he's not mean-spirited. He has some pretty good public-spirited attitudes about politics. For example, he'd be much broader than a man like Marvin Griffin or a man like Jimmy Carter or a man like Lester Maddox in the governor's office. And probably would do, you know, probably would make an interesting governor. He certainly would make it possible to begin, for local organizations to begin holding up their heads and say, see, that's one of ours, and he's doing very well, and isn't he an intelligent man, and he's the kind of man we could follow. I don't know that I believe in political parties that have one hero. I doubt that I do, but I do believe that it's necessary to have a symbol somewhere that a political party can rally behind in a state that never has had Republican office holders to any degree before. And the Georgia Republicans just never have had the symbol that they could deal with and make an example for the rest of the state. The Democratic Party is it's doing some better now. Ruben Askew was in town earlier in the spring and spoke at a Jefferson Jackson Day dinner. And there were about 800 Democrats at a fairly expensive fundraising dinner. And they were more optimistic and more enthusiastic than I'd seen them in 2-3 years. They are beginning to have a goodly number of attractive political candidates again. All the half dozen attractive candidates in the race against Maddox may end up killing each other off, and nobody may be able to defeat it. But there are a lot of them in the category. In the lieutenant governor's race, Zell Miller and people like that are very attractive and would be quality kinds of people to hold office in the state. And I think in Zell's case, he's probably going to get elected. Because he is a man who has been involved in things like prison reform and in trying to deal with the Pardon and Parole Board to get it straightened out so that there's not that built-in bias against blacks or built-in bias against the poor. And I think he will run very well. Plus the fact that the Democrats have not really, except for that one hemorrhage of state office holders, they haven't really lost any of their attractive political candidates in the last few years. And they haven't lost many courthouses. They've lost in a few places, like in Macon and Savannah, they have lost either the courthouse or the mayor's office. Savannah, the Democrats have won it back now, and in
Columbus Republicans have taken over him.
Macon is a very unattractive candidate for, I mean, a mayor down there, but the Republicans have. He got the hell beat out of him in a congressional race. Just got slaughtered by Bill Stuckey. Columbus is different and has been Republican population centers. And it probably is going to stay that way. J.R. Allen, who was the mayor down there, wasn't now he was as close to an attractive political figure as the Republicans have had in this state. And had he not been killed in an accident, he might very well have been a serious candidate for governor. I wouldn't be surprised if he wouldn't have been a serious candidate for governor. But in a, it's amazing. People always say about Southern politics that no Southern voter knows how to split a ticket. Like hell, they don't. They don't ever vote for Democrats in the presidential races anymore. And they don't ever vote for Republicans in the local races. They're experts at splitting tickets. So. And seem to enjoy it.
How do you assess the state of black politics in Georgia?
In the city of Atlanta, their black politics very healthy. The absolutely equal split in leadership responsibilities in the city, on the city council, makes that pretty healthy. The mayor is making his share of mistakes, but he'll get through them, and when he gets through his share of mistakes, he'll be an interesting political figure. Andy Young is one of the really bright people that the South has produced in the last 25 years. Blacks don't feel that they're a part of either of the political parties in statewide elections, and for good reasons, because they've been ignored until this governor's race. There's active competition from a couple of candidates in the governor's race, George Busby and Bert Lance, for black votes in this primary in August. And they all feel more a part of the political process than they have recent past. That applies to Atlanta blacks. Now, the Atlanta black political attitude is somewhat different from what it is in the rest of the state. It's more militant and a lot more sensitive to slurs, both real and imagined. There are a lot of blacks in South Georgia who still vote for political candidates who say horrible racial things and take horrible racial positions. They wouldn't be forgiven in Atlanta, but they are forgiven in some South Georgia counties. Overall, the blacks have not really yet been brought into the leadership of the Democratic Party, and there really aren't any in the Republican Party, except there's one interesting exception. Stan Scott, whose uncle is the publisher of the Atlanta Daily World, is a special assistant to Nixon, and Stan has been able to work in the White House and do a lot of important things, and he's pretty well accepted and understood in the Atlanta black community, and that's the only breakover really from the Democratic kind of politics that ordinarily is practiced.
And I think there's a city councilman over in Columbus.
Yeah, that's right. I can't remember that fellow's name, but he didn't really have any impact on a very wide basis.
Is race still the key to understanding politics in Georgia?
race is a key to understanding Lester Maddox's politics, I guess, to some extent. But no, I don't really think so. I really think that if you look at the racial breakdowns in the Atlanta mayor's race, it's the key to understanding who voted for whom in that race. Sam Massel just ran a racist campaign in that runoff, and that's the reason the split was the kind of split that it was. But
now, thinking back to what you said about schizophrenia,
yeah,
at the beginning, and you've got Maddox and and Andy Young,
yeah,
could that schizophrenia also relate to racial problems?
It's probably.
You said Wallace contrary to the state, and
yeah,
it appears that Maddox has got about 40 points, no matter what he does.
It probably does. I haven't ever really explored it in exactly that way. My guess is that most Georgia voters think of themselves these days as having come a long way in racial politics, or toward a more moderate position on race. But that at the bedrock, they probably vote on that basis in some races. For example, the governor's race, if it were not for the race issue, Lester Maddox would not be as strong a candidate as he is, but because he has been defending his own position about the race issue, he somehow has a reputation for being a
Roy Harris told me that Lester Maddox's, the reason Lester Maddox runs so strong is he reflects the racial views of most Georgians, but not only that, he's perceived as being sincere in his religious views, and he's perceived as being an honest man.
I sure think that being sincere in religion and perceived as being an honest man, that's the reason he does as well as he does with a lot of people.
Is he the last?
I think the story is because he was in his life he was chasing blacks out of his restaurant at the point of a pistol, and in an inaugural speech he was saying something entirely different from that, saying that they have to be brought into the mainstream at the time for discrimination was passed. He didn't say exactly that. I don't remember the quote now, but it's fairly easy to check. But he said very moderate things in that inaugural speech. Maddox's popularity is really that he is a personality, unlike any other personality that this state has seen. And it's tied to his early attitude about race. But it's tied also to the fact that he's just a super salesman for himself, and that he knows how to merchandise his own kind of attitudes and thinking and everything, so that he I don't think most of the people who are going to vote for him this summer are going to say, I'm going to vote for Lester Maddox because he is a segregationist first, last, and always. I think most people are going to tell themselves, whether they've been candid with themselves is another question, they are going to tell themselves they're voting for him because they think he's honest, which is easy to dispute, and people will dispute it all summer. He just did not tell the truth about a couple of votes in the legislative session. But people choose to overlook that because he has done such a good merchandising job over a period of time of his own honesty that people have clearly done.
Is he the last of his kind in Georgia?
Yes, sir. Nobody else could follow him, and nobody else will ever be able to take the kinds of stands he has taken and get away with them. And in that sense, your earlier question is really relevant. Race is a part of the key to understanding Georgia politics, but it's not the key to understand where Lester Maddox is in state politics right now.
Isn't part of Maddox's reputation for being honest the fact that his position on race is what it is, and a lot of people say, you know, that's the way I feel, you know, and the others really believe that, they just won't say it.
Yeah, I think that started out to be the case. I think that was the case 4 or 5 years ago. I don't know that I, and that may be a residual effect that is a holdover that I don't see now. It may be the down inside that's what a lot of people are thinking. But I would argue that most people that I see who are going to vote for him don't admit that anymore. That they argue that that's not why they're for
him. Oh, yeah. I would.
Psychologically, down inside, you may be right. But as a practical matter, I don't think that's what they feel.
But I'm saying,
but that's important, however. They used to articulate 4 or 5 years ago if that was the reason, but now don't do it. It suggests some kind of attitude change.
Oh, I think it's a tremendous attitude change. I think that what people who try to relate all politics in America to race now are doing are misleading themselves. I don't deny that it's a significant and important factor. But I would argue very vigorously that a man starting out as a racist in Georgia politics now just get the hell beat out of him. He just simply wouldn't get started. And I think you have to take that as one of the keys. You know, if we started today at 5 points with two guys, one of them a very articulate man arguing the flat-out segregationist point of view, and another one arguing the moderate point of view. The guy other things were equal. The man arguing the moderate point of view would win. And that's the reason I say that racial politics is being overstated in most of the reporting's been done in the South.
Being oversimplified too.
Yeah,
a big part of it.
Yeah,
they put a reverse twist on it. They say, well, now the politics is playing to the black.
Yeah.
So you know, so that's why it's still terribly important.
Yeah. Yeah, and I see how you can argue that, but it seems to me that if you had taken I don't know much about this race, but if you'd taken that Wallace race in the Democratic primary in North Carolina in 1972, and if Sanford and Wallace had not had any other factors involved in the race, but Wallace was just arguing a segregationist point of view, and Sanford was arguing just a moderate point of view, and there weren't any other factors involved, and I think Sanford would have won that race. That was not the sole determining factor in that campaign.
Is that the major change in Southern politics in the last 25 years?
That's right. The blunting of the campaign rhetoric and therefore the planting of new ideas about race is exactly what has changed most dramatically and most drastically.
Why does that happen so easily? Or what appears to be so easily and so rapidly.
A lot of people who've theorized about it. My own theory is that there's just too heavy a burden of guilt to be able to sustain that argument once it was all out in the open. And that no politician is tough enough to sustain a flat-out racist posture once people have begun to look at all aspects of the racial question. I can't think of one who's that tough anymore.
Yeah, but most people we talk to, if they think back just 10 years ago, and you ask them if you could put yourself back in time 10 years ago, would you have foreseen what had happened? Well, inevitably they say no. They wouldn't have seen the changes occurring that fast.
Yeah, but they were also, well, that may be. And it may be that I have convinced myself of things that I didn't believe 10 years ago. But if you believed in the voter registration, in a voter education project, and if you believed in the Civil Rights Act and the Public Accommodations Act and so forth, and if you believed that that was going to get the question out and on the table for everybody and to examine, and if you believed that it couldn't stand the light of examination, then that kind of change was inevitable. Now maybe it did come, I guess it did come faster than I thought it would come. In fact, I know it did, but looked at objectively, racial politics didn't have a snowball's chance in hell of surviving as the dominant theme in Southern politics once all the questions were raised in the open.
Where in that does the Voting Rights Act fit?
Not as importantly as in the moral question. That there's a lot of sort of rhetoric going around at the moment that the reason you don't hear as much racial politics now as you used to hear is that blacks got the right to vote. And that's true in the city of Atlanta, of course. But it's not as true in a statewide race. In a statewide race, you would, if you were to use my example again, of two guys starting from 5 points to run a race, one a flat-out segregationist and the other a moderate, or a liberal, make it a liberal on the race question. Hell, there's not enough voter registration to have changed that many minds. That's not what did it. What did it was the honest examination of the question by people who came flat up against it and had to deal with it. I think that's true. It's a very, or at least I believe that's true, but I can see how some people could say that's really masking that the South has just learned to mask a lot of its racial attitudes.
Do you think there's been genuine change in attitudes?
Sure.
Do you think the change has resulted because what's been in effect forced experiences and forced change in personal relationships? 10 years ago, blacks didn't eat in the restaurant with whites. Whites went to the restaurant, blacks weren't there. Their children didn't go to the same school. They weren't blacks at the PTA meeting that whites went to. Weren't blacks clerking as tellers at the banks that whites went to. The whole personal experience is based on everyday relationships.
I hate to admit, but I don't think it's because of the forced changes in relationships. I really think that as a moral question, when it got out on the table, examined it as a moral question, that's when the change had to come because they no longer were able to sustain their segregationist argument as a moral position. And in a Bible Belt state like this is, people just couldn't sustain that kind of...
I was going to ask you, what was the role of organized religion in that?
Not much if you look at it as the activities of churches and ministers individually.
But very great if you look at what quiet ministers and quiet churches and little towns all over the South have been saying for 100 years. The word brotherhood was a hell of a lot more important in a Baptist church in Gainesville than it was in the Civil Rights Movement for 100 years. And when you transfer that moral argument and begin to apply it to the kinds of inequality that have been sustained, the argument fell in a big hurry. And there were people all over. There are people still all over Georgia. I don't know. There are all over everywhere. You say, well, you can't. You really can't argue for racial politics anymore. But the blacks had better stop arguing racial politics too. And we really are about to get to the point where race is about to come back into politics on the other side, but that won't lie. That's really a flash in the pan kind of attitude, because if there's any place that that traditional biblical kinds of teachings are more powerful than they are in a white community in the South, it's in the black community. And that really won't last me. I don't think very much.
What was the white reaction in Atlanta to the election of White Fowler and his substantial minority, but substantial black support against Jose Williams?
What really stunned Atlanta was his getting into the runoff instead of Wade Mitchell getting into the runoff. Wade Mitchell, by the way, is a very decent sort of fellow who came to have a reputation for being more conservative in that campaign, but really didn't deserve to have. He was one of those guys who gets a little bit of the cake both ways. People were saying that because of the banker, and they had made a deal to give him some votes because he was Jackson. He didn't deserve either one of those kinds of attitudes. But when White got into the runoff instead of Wade getting into the runoff, there was a sort of an initial burst of concern that Sharon as a political process was essential, and that White ought to get the presidency of the council, because it was obvious that Mayor was going to win the mayor's race. Then I think it surprised some people that White was able to do as well as he was against Jose in the race. It shouldn't have been a surprise. In fact, what should have been a surprise is how they got as many votes as they did in the black community, because he's really not all that much of a factor in black politics in Atlanta or anywhere else. But there was that feeling of solidarity that was inevitable.
But what was it that forced this confrontation with the moral issue? Was it the change in the legal status?
No, I don't think so. I'm in a minority of one about this, and I understand that I am. But I think the fact that it came into everybody's living room every night, and with everybody's coffee every morning, the question of the public debate of it was what was important, and infinitely more important than the law that eventually would pass.
You mean you couldn't avoid the debate?
Yeah. That it permeated everything, that every public thing that people did over and above what they did in their businesses or professions. That it was impossible to go into the barbershop without arguing about it, or at least discussing it. That it was impossible to read the paper without having it. That it was impossible to turn to deal with it. That
that it permeated the whole news structure for so many years, and because the news media, all of them, were dominated by a group of people who knew better than anybody ever had before how to use the public media to get an issue into the minds of everybody and to begin to get the argument started. And the argument really was the key to it. It wasn't the law that finally got passed. Hell, the fucking law is going to destroy it with this thing. And so was every town square, and so was the deacons meeting at church on Wednesday night about what do we do if somebody shows up. So was the every other discussion that went on in the South for all over here. And it's that kind of, maybe I'm just a Pollyanna, but I think the most important thing that happened is that the country argued about it openly and vigorously and vociferously, and sometimes violently, and came face to face with it.
That's with the country, but playing devil's advocate for a minute, during all those arguments at the barbershop or wherever, my impression always was that, you know, with rare exceptions, unless you had a little band of liberals together somewhere or someplace, but generally, you had a consensus that it was going to be an awful thing. And this is something the federal government's trying to ram down our throats.
I think all that's true.
But then after the law itself passed, someone today, well, I think it was Bobby Roy, and his contention was that, you know, that Georgians, Southerners, would just sort of tend to be law-abiding people, and if the law says you got to do it, then you got to do it. And that put it all in a different light. Of course, when it did put it in a different light, then you had to confront it on a different basis. That knocked all the legal underpinnings, which a lot of the moral argument was used on.
Yeah.
I mean, you could defend it morally on the ground that it's up to the state to decide or whatever.
But if you walked into any small town in Georgia today, which side had you rather be on? Had you rather be arguing the moral position, or had you rather be arguing the law itself? Which one did you know, if you wanted to win, and you wanted to win against white Southerners who had been segregationists, had you rather argue the moral position or the law itself?
Oh, I'd argue the moral position, and the only way I would disagree with you basically is I think the moral position came after, followed the legal position. That was when the legal position changed. That's what forced it onto the table in the South. I don't think the argument before the passage of the laws themselves changed a lot of attitudes among white Southerners. I think they were all hardening and still resenting, and, you know, all going to vote for Goldwater because he voted against the Civil Rights Act. There was just a lot of resentment. What someone told me, that the reason there's so much support for Nixon in the South is that he's beleaguered by the same people who used to beleaguer us, is the way it was phrased.
Well,
yet the country as a whole, however, was convinced by the moral arguments before you got public accommodations and voting rights and all that, I think.
Oh, I think, yeah. If you're talking about the non-South, I think the moral argument was made on through the media, as you say. You're denying people the right to eat in public places. You were denying people the right to vote who met all the qualifications. You know, there was no moral defense.
Yeah, but I think what he's saying is that prompted the debate in the South as well.
I don't draw the distinction between the South and the rest of the country that sharply. Atlanta is the most liberal city in the country.
You're talking about today or 10 years ago?
I'm talking about both things.
Atlanta may have been different now, you know.
Well, yeah, but, you know, I've been rattled around in Crawfordville. I've been shoved and lots of different towns. I've been denouncing on every goddamn stump in Georgia, but all I'm trying to say is that the passage of the public accommodations law didn't change nearly as many minds in my hometown as the argument for 3 years about whether or not black folks ought to be allowed to eat in the Dixie Cafe on the square. That argument was the one that was important, and the passage of the law sort of ratified that decision.
Okay, are you saying then that this moral argument paved the way for the ready acceptance of the law when it was changed?
Right. Look, I don't know how you prove this, and I don't mean to be very picky about it, because I could be...
No, I'm trying to get it down to be precise, and I think we're sort of getting it down to be precise, because it's an interesting argument.
It's an interesting position. I don't buy the idea that Southerners change their mind, though I am really fond of Bobby Rowan. I think he's a fine man. But I don't really buy the argument that Southerners or anybody else change their minds because the law gets passed. I never have bought that argument, though I have argued for most of the laws that have been passed. But that's not why voters respond like they do to different kinds of political campaigns. The voters in Georgia 100 years ago didn't. They in part responded to the Reconstruction laws, but they responded a good deal more to